We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
San Francisco skyline. This is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
Welcome into our fourth and final hour this Monday afternoon. It's been a big show. We've had an awful lot to talk about. Two NFL games that went in completely opposite directions at the end. The Warriors are only pointed in one direction. Incredible. They're ludicrous. They are 22-0 on the year, but I am officially putting this team on red alert. Red upset alert tomorrow night in Indiana for reasons that have nothing to do with what the Pacers' record is. But you don't need to tweet me or text me what the Pacers' record is. I'm acutely aware. Matchups, fatigue, and actual physics of how basketball is supposed to work is going to catch up with Golden State. At one point in time, tomorrow night is the night where I got the heebie-jeebies about their winning streak coming to an end. I will make no bold guarantees because I want them to go ahead and go to 23-0. 23-0 sounds so much better than 22-1, it's not even funny. 22-1 is pretty nice. 23-0 is unbelievable. So let's keep all of this going, but that's a red alert game. It's the only game of this road trip that I like looked at and go, maybe there. Maybe there. So that is coming up in a little bit. We'll certainly get into it with Sean Devaney, who writes for the Sporting News covering the NBA at the bottom of the hour. And we're about to get to the Del replay, getting back to the conversation we had with Raider head coach Jack Del Rio. I don't want anybody left on hold, though, before that happens. So let's take two quick calls. We got Oscar in San Francisco. How are you, Oscar?
Hey, what's going on, Damon? I'm a proud Niner fan, but I think we need to part ways with Cap. He's inconsistent. He hasn't been the same since they lost in the Super Bowl. You know, a lot of people like to blame Greg Roman on that call, but, you know, Colin Kaepernick being an elite quarterback could have caught an audible and could have ran a bootleg, and we could have made that touchdown and won.
Well, here's the real deal, that it seems like every direction is pointed towards him out of town, but today, and the Niners have a weird way of leaking information, they said it's not out of the realm of possibility he'd be back. And given that, here's the thing. What would you rather have next year? Kaepernick and Gabbert or Kaepernick and player X? I think you're safer off with Kaepernick and Gabbert. I really do.
Honestly, look at our higher-ups. They said, oh, nothing's wrong with Harbaugh, but look at that. At the end of the year, we got rid of Harbaugh, so we can't really trust what these guys are saying.
Well, you've learned that lesson correctly. There's no doubt. At least you're paying attention. Look, we'll get more into – here's the thing. The guy who's not playing really doesn't matter that much. So I'm not going to spend the rest of this year talking about Kaepernick. He's out of the picture right now. Whether he's brought back into the picture for 2016, it's a financial decision this team has to make. To me, the amount of money he'd make and the trade bait he might represent, it'd be worth rolling the dice on it. I still think they gave up on Kaepernick a little bit too early. Maybe he lost the confidence in himself, and it was the reason why. If he just took off like that, like Gabbert does, he'd be a lot more successful. But he doesn't. He's got the yips. They coach the yips into him. He's got the yips. I can't. Who knows? But Blaine Gabbert and question mark as the Niners quarterback depth chart for next year. That sounds like a steep, steep gamble. Let's go to Douglas in Palo Alto real quick.
Hey guys, how you guys doing?
Doing well, Douglas.
Yeah, you know, I just had a quick comment to say something about with the Warriors' success, and I really just had the concern that I feel that the city of Oakland isn't getting enough recognition with all the success that the Warriors are having. I understand the Warriors are collectively like the team of the Bay Area with fans from the South Bay Peninsula, East Bay, and the city, But I feel that Oakland should be getting a lot more respect, especially considering Oakland always just gets negative attention, especially with the media. I mean, if you follow things that you see like on TNT or even ESPN, I think it was Bowman, he used to play for the Spurs, their analyst, who thought that the Warriors played in San Francisco. And it's just a little alarming that Oakland doesn't get enough respect.
Yeah, well, you know, that's pretty much how Oakland's positioned itself as a city, as a punchline, and they're doing nothing to correct it with horrific leadership, no investment, nobody's got any vision over there. They're going to lose certainly two, it looks like, if not all three of their teams eventually. And the news that I saw about Oakland today is that it is the third most dangerous city to live in America in terms of deadly crime. So that's very disappointing. But, you know, all I can tell you is that nothing says more about the psyche of Oakland as a community than the guy who says, well, the city's not getting enough credit for what the Warriors have done. Hey, the city of Oakland hasn't hit a single shot yet this year. Hasn't played a lick of defense either. And I've never heard a single Giant fan go, well, the city of San Francisco doesn't get enough credit for all the three World Series. I've just never heard that.
Yeah.
I've never heard that once in my life. Look, Warriors fans are constantly being billed as the best, loudest fans in the NBA, and that is a de facto compliment to Oakland.
That's why they call it Roracle.
Yeah, so I don't know. You better tuck your insecurity in. It's showing. It's like a slip. I can see your insecurity. It's dangling out of that call you just made to the Damon Bruce Show. Hey, when it comes to the city of Oakland, the teams have voted. They want out. All right. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't mean to be all rude and down, and it's the holiday Eve season, and I'm trying to be nice, Damon. But the truth is, the city of Oakland has been declared a natural disaster area by the three teams that occupy it, and they're fighting to get the hell out. So there you go. And on that note, I think it's time we get to the Del Replay, shall we? Jack Del Rio joins us each and every Monday live at 3:30. So many of you are at work and busy that in case you missed it, we want to play back the conversation for you, and that's what we do right here and now. And as always, we started our conversation just by a simple, hey, Coach, hey, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Good afternoon.
Look, we've seen this team. We've seen you put the ball in Derek's hands at the end of games, and he's made game-winning plays on game-winning drives, and maybe that goes into his psyche when he tries a little too hard to be the guy to make the play down the field. Do you feel that that played into any of the turnovers that dotted yesterday's performance?
Well, I think what went into it was him, and I think he'd tell you this, trying to do too much. And, you know, he is our leader. He is a heck of a player. I love him. I believe in him. And it just didn't go, you know, the way we all wanted it to go yesterday. But he's got a real bright future. We're going to learn from that experience and go forward full speed ahead.
I don't mean this as a criticism of Alex Smith, who's a fine quarterback with a long professional career and a resume to be proud of for sure. But, you know, I've always felt like he's made mistakes in the past that prevent him from some of the success he might have in the future, where Derek is a guy who's got success and that might force him to make a play that is going to be just, you know, it's going to blow up in his face once or twice. Is it that kind of a deal that you have to make if you want a big arm down the field quarterback? You know, scared money doesn't play well at the gambling table. Same thing about quarterback play, I feel. I'd rather have a quarterback who's a little bit more aggressive than a little too conservative. How about you?
Well, I really enjoyed the thread the needle shot to end the first half.
That was awesome.
I mean, so yeah. I mean, if you're playing scared, you don't throw that ball. So, you know, we want to learn and we want to, you know, be smart. But I don't ever want a guy back there that's playing scared or timid. So, and Derek's not that. And I think, like I said, I think he'll learn from this experience. Nobody took it harder than he did, but I want to. I tried to assure him yesterday, and we will, you know, when we talk again. But hey, you know, we absolutely believe in you, and we'll learn from this and move on, and we'll do it together.
You know, forcing a play, eating a play, taking a sack, throwing a ball away—we file all of this under instincts. How do you, as a coaching staff, work with a player's instincts, which seem to be, you know, it's like, what's the old joke? Like, how can I affect your self-confidence? The key word is self. How can you affect a guy's instincts when really instincts are what you have in you without any outside influence?
Yeah, you create drills and you know, that's what the quarterback coach is for. That's what the offensive coordinator for. And they'll work on that, and I'll work on that. Todd Downey's done a great job, I think, with the quarterback group. And, you know, that'll be something that I promise you that we'll be drilling.
The moment where it seemed to unravel yesterday was on the interception on the crossing pattern. Would you talk about where the interception occurred? Was the throw wrong? Was the top of the route wrong? What happened?
Actually, I'd probably find a different place where I thought it went bad. I thought when we were sitting with the ball on the 33-yard line, you know, driving with a 6-point lead and the ball, and you know, the idea is okay, another tug would be great at minimum a field goal here, and take that clock down, you know, under 10 and up two scores. That's where we were heading, you know, prior to. You know, the interception that went, you know, that went way back. So I believe that was the first of them. So, you know, the others, I mean, they all had their, I mean, to me, they had the one common denominator. Okay. And that was, you know, trying to do too much. And so, like I said, lessons to be learned, obviously a tough loss for us. We really wanted to be in second place in control of everything in front of us, and that's no longer the case. And, you know, we didn't earn that yesterday.
Raider head coach Jack Del Rio here on the Damon Bruce Show. And Charles Woodson was taking this one to heart. He said it was one of the harder losses he's been a part of. And I think it's for all the reasons that you just described. You know, I always felt like playoff talk this year was a full year ahead of schedule, but it was officially in the math and in the numbers as it looks less and less like a possibility. Do you have any concerns about motivation?
I don't. I do believe that that we all took it hard as we should, because what we wanted to do was reward the Raider Nation, who, by the way, yesterday rocked our stadium. It was an unbelievable environment to be playing and coaching in, and really awesome. So we're very appreciative of our fans and the support we get. But we wanted nothing more than to deliver, and you know, it didn't happen. Okay, so one of the things that I've really, really, you know, grown to appreciate and respect about this football team is this is a resilient bunch. We've stayed tight. We will continue to play hard. We know that we have the abilities in this locker room to become a really good football team, and we're working hard at that every day.
Coach, defensively, do you need more speed or do you need better tackling? I always thought the one thing you really can't measure at the combine is the most important thing about a defensive player. It's not how fast he is, how strong he is, how quick he can jump. Can the guy tackle, yes or no? What do you need more of, speed or tackling?
We'll take both. We'll take speed and tackling. Yeah, no, I think, you know, and I think the defense has played better over the last several weeks. I think, you know, we kept ourselves in the game yesterday. I thought we did a good job forcing some three and outs. We get the two forced fumbles, and you know, we were winning that turnover battle till late in the fourth quarter. So that's what you're looking to do. And so, yeah, but I think where you are doing well, you see the speed does show up. It is so important, and you have to tackle if you're going to be any good on defense.
Coach, how's Nate Allen today?
He's sore. He's sore. We got a test on his knee. It came back negative. He's sore from the shot he took. So he'll be day to day. We'll just monitor that soreness. But we got a good checkup in terms of, you know, going in there and making sure there wasn't anything disrupted.
You know, I feel like, some missed tackles are, you know, dot some of the losses, of this season. And it's easy to see an interception. The guy sitting in the last row in the stadium can see that clearly as a, you know, something that didn't go your way. Outside of some missed tackles and the interceptions, was there anything that upset you in that game? Anything else? The blocking that you had up front, the blocking that you didn't have up front, the consistent pressure that you were getting on Alex in the first half sort of vanishing a little bit in the second half? Was that because of an adjustment that they made or a different defensive scheme that you put in?
No, not really. I thought the rush was pretty good all day. I thought, you know, Khalil was really pretty strong.
Yeah.
Like three different times he was around the quarterback, got credit for two sacks. Heaney came once on a blitz, did a nice job. Mario Edwards continues to show up. So, no, I thought we, you know, look, the opening drive for both teams, you know, both offenses went right down, and then after that we kind of settled into a defensive slugfest. But, I thought the effort was pretty solid.
Jack Del Rio here on 95.7 The Game. The play on the goal line, the Chiefs ran to Macklin, where they had that bunch group, and Alex just zips the ball right down to the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
Yeah, I've seen that play, but I've never seen it run like on the 6-inch line of the goal line.
Right.
I thought it was a good play. How often do you see a play run or work against you where you just go like, ooh, that was kind of cool. I might file that away for myself one day.
Right. Yeah, no, that was well executed on their part. Every now and then that does happen. Every now and then we'll get somebody, and every now and then they'll get us. And that was one they got for sure yesterday.
It was a nice design. It really was. Do you poach? Do you poach a good design? Do you do a lot of play poaching when you see something that you like?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're not ashamed to poach if it's a good idea. It's you know, it's part of what game planning is in this league, and you know, people will poach week to week, but I think you don't want to ever stray too far away from who you are, what you do, because you're going to have some fundamentals that you understand and believe in and all that, and that helps you execute a lot faster and play a lot more efficiently. But little nuggets like that, yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's the old Milton Berle line: smart borrows, genius steals. Something like
that's
that.
Right.
Jack Del Rio here on 95.7 The Game. Coach, how do you prepare for altitude? You know, you spend an awful lot of time in Denver, obviously. It is a different animal up there in terms of just breathing. Can I suggest you bring in some of the heavier fans from the black hole to just have guys, like, you know, sit on your team's chest after a series of wind sprints this week or something?
Yeah, right. It won't. I don't think that'll do the trick. Really, it's pretty simple. It's a matter of hydration. We took teams from Jacksonville up into Denver and won several times. So we'll travel in Saturday evening and spend as little time there as possible, knowing that the longer you're there, there's kind of that time when, you know, the longer you're there until you actually have a time, which about 2 weeks is what it takes to actually, you know, acclimate yourself. So you can't do it in a short trip. So the later you go in, the better, and that's what we'll do. We'll go in late, we'll be hydrated, and be ready to roll.
There's a lot of still unknown with Brock Osweiler. He's played so little. Do you have an advantage that another coach might not have had you not spent the time around him when you were in Denver?
Well, I don't know. We didn't see that much of each other in practice. I know he's big. He's athletic. You know, he allows him to be under center more, and I think that's the biggest difference between you know, what he brings, and then obviously Peyton with all the experience and the wisdom. But you know, Brock is younger, more athletic, and a guy that'll be under center more often.
How different is their game plan besides him being under center? It seems like they're leaning on their running backs more with Brock too. You know, you're prepared for Peyton once this year. How much differently will you prepare for Brock?
Very similar, just a little more of what Gary likes to do, you know, what he brought from Houston and then in Baltimore, you know, where the run action and the quarterback boots and things off that run action and how they complement each other.
Let's just wrap up with this. I like to end on a little bit of a positive note, and, you know, we've already had our Yams Richard time, so let's go back to Charles Woodson. Great players are just around the ball all the time. And this freaking guy is around the ball all the time. His scoop off the fumble was one thing. Just ripping the ball out of Kelsey's hands was another, though. I mean, that's just nasty, mean football right there. You've been around a lot of greats. We've basked in this guy in weeks past, but I just can't ask you enough about Charles Woodson.
Yeah, really, the lawnmower takeaway was the best. I mean, the other one, he went and scooped. He's always around the ball. He's just got a nose for the action. But the lawnmower, when he started the lawnmower and pulled that ball away and took off down the sideline, and you know, just another great moment. And really, I'm a little disappointed we didn't help him score, because, you know, the great ones are looking to score, and he was looking to score there, and we just didn't do enough blocking in front of him.
By the way, the NFL calls these plays these days. Any play goes for more than 20 yards is a flag somewhere, so maybe it's a blessing. I don't know. But obviously, yes, you'd like the full convoy for six. Coach, thanks very much. Good to talk to you again. Hopefully we got a win in Denver to talk about and a strong close to this season. But Look, I always felt this was going to be a year that was earmarked with moments of real growth and moments of growing pain. And I think that that's what that Chiefs, we got to file this Chiefs games under growing pain and better days coming in the future.
Well, sounds good to me. I appreciate it. Good talking to you, David.
Jack Del Rio, great to talk to him. And since they're playing Denver next, we thought we'd go to the Rocky Mountains for an update from the official brother.
And an owner cone and a white godfather hat. He drives a long black gangster Cadillac. He can steal a broad's mind, man, 3 or 4 minutes. It's not how long you talk, bro. It's what you put in it.
Look out!
All the way from Denver, Colorado. The man, the myth, the legend. He is Jason McBride, the official brother of the Damon Bruce Show, and it is good to talk to you, my friend. How are you?
Enjoying the buffoonery that is Raiders week here in Denver, man.
Now, are people more fired up for the Raiders than they used to be because this is actually a football team that plays football now?
No, D. Bruce. It's always been at the same level, no matter how good or bad either team is. This is always like a mini Super Bowl for, especially here in Denver. It's always crazy with these fans. And Raider week. It's always been the same ever since I can remember.
Really? I didn't know that it was. I know that Raiders and Chiefs got a little feisty in both cities. I didn't know Raiders Broncos brought out so much venom.
It's crazy here. I mean, if you can remember.
The snowball game?
Oh, that. And then the Broncos beat the Raiders to go to the AFC Championship in their first Super Bowl year. So ever since then, I mean, that was like the Haven Moses catch. Ever since then, it's been kind of bananas with these two teams.
There you go. It happened so long ago, Moses was involved.
He had the best afro in NFL history.
Ooh. I mean, we're going to have to do some side-by-side comparisons to really feel good about that.
Look it up, man. Look it up. Number 25, Haven Moses.
We will look it up. Have you happened to notice that the Golden State Warriors are the hottest thing on the planet? That is Kate Upton included?
They're 22-0, D. Bruce. You hear all these comparisons with teams that, you know, in the past, and I think this is a different era of basketball, especially when you think about Steph Curry can pass Larry Bird's all-time threes made in the next couple weeks or so. But, I mean, they're a great team. And, I mean, if they believe that they can win 82 games, and it looks like on the court they believe that, you know, it's going to be hard to stop them. I mean, this is a team that, like, went through the West last year without being beat in like, 4 or 5 months. So, they're going to be hard to beat. I mean, the Nuggets aren't going to do it. I know that.
No, the Nuggets are not going to do it. I know that, too. I feel very good about that. This Pacers game in Indiana tomorrow puts me a little bit on red alert. I do think that Paul George right now is maybe the best player not named Steph Curry, or is at least playing the best brand of basketball not named Steph Curry. And Monte Ellis is going to have a little chip on his shoulder game. And all I can tell you is that basketball does happen in the state of Indiana. And there's just, I don't know, like I just, I'm, it, it doesn't even make sense why I think it could come to an end tomorrow. But it's the game that's got me most concerned on this road trip.
Well, you mentioned it. Paul George is all the way back 100%. And I think he's a matchup nightmare for Golden State. I mean, you can roll Draymond Green at him. You can roll Harrison Barnes. But, I mean, offensively, this kid is hard to stop. So, but then again, I mean, you look at what you guys at Golden State can offer offensively. So, I mean, if they go in there and play their game, and it seems like everybody picks up. If Steph's not playing well, then somebody else picks it up. If that guy's not playing well, then the next – it's like next guy up for Golden State. So, I think they continue tomorrow.
All right. Dude, we got to get running. We got Sean Devaney, Sporting News. Is there anything else we need to know out of Denver right now that'll make us better, smarter sports fans? Have you already started to rock out with your Brock out?
I can't say anything right now, especially airworthy. But, enjoy life. That's it.
There it is. Just joie de vivre for everyone. That is good advice from
joie
the,
de vivre.
From the
right.
Official brother. And, hey, from me to you, happy Hanukkah.
Shalom.
Thank you. There he is, the man, the myth, the legend. He is Mr. McBride. Damon, when you started at 95.7 The Game, you vowed to be the show that helps the A's get a new stadium in Oakland, but it seems as though you've given up on that mission. What gives? Marcus in San Francisco. What gives Marcus is reality and incompetence. The reality of the situation is the amount of incompetence being showed by all the owners, with the exception of one, Joe Lacob, who has very competently put plans together to move, is unfortunately much more impactful than any opinion I could ever offer. You got to want to not drown as much as I got to want to throw you a life preserver. We're going to talk to Sean Devaney about the NBA next.
Baby, I got the feeling.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. We're back with the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
I just saw here on Twitter, not hours after the Sixers hired Jerry Colangelo to try to figure out how basketball works, they lose by 51. 51 points the Sixers go down by tonight. And obviously, Jerry Colangelo's addition does not mean you should start planning a parade route in Philadelphia. To talk about everything that's going on in the NBA, I always like turning to our friend Sean Devaney, who covers the league for the Sporting News. You can follow him at Sean Devaney on Twitter, and it's good to have you on here, Sean. You might have heard the Warriors off to a nice start this year. Has that news reached the East Coast yet?
Well, they're coming here to Boston this week, so I was just looking them up, and it seems like they've been pretty good this year.
It really is ridiculous, the amount of accolades, the amount of statistics that you can use to describe how good the start is, how hot the start is, how long the streak is. It's amazing. In order for us to talk about other things than just bask in the Warriors, we've been playing 30 seconds of waxing poetic. You get 30 seconds to wax poetic about Steph, and then we'll talk about other things. So go ahead.
Probably the best thing there's something that Steph Curry does that I've never seen anybody be able to do, is with a limited amount of athleticism, create as much space as he can. When he does that step back jumper, I have never seen anybody be able to do that, to fire it up that quick. And of course the accuracy is off the charts, but just his ability. You could just sit there and watch him all day. Just do that little step back jumper. Everybody knows it's coming, but nobody can defend it. To me, if I were to wax poetic about Steph, that's probably the thing that I would most like to wax on about.
I think he needs to be picked up at three quarters court, defended across the timeline, and then you almost have to double team him in a unique way, where you're not double teaming him with both men at once, but you have somebody playing the shot that might come, and then somebody playing the dribble if the shot fake is all you get. I think you got to stack double team him almost to slow him down.
Yeah, and that's a great strategy, because they've got nobody else who can score, right? I mean, that's the issue, right? I mean, you could go ahead and do that, but they'll just pick you apart with Clay, who's playing much better lately. You know, Harrison Barnes, Draymond. I mean, you can go right down the list. It's so hard to defend them. It's so hard to find an answer right now for the way that they're playing.
The Warriors are the only team in the NBA that can play one of their worst games on the season and still win by 16. I really thought that their legs that they spent in Toronto might have cost them in Brooklyn. That didn't happen. Again, they're coming up to Boston on Friday. They got a trip at Indiana, which I'm just circling, man. I think this game in Indiana could be a little more troublesome than any Warrior fan wants to admit, because you're looking at, you know, the best powers in sports right now, or certainly in the NBA. And I think, you know, if Curry's one of the best players in the NBA, Paul George is not far away.
Yeah, he hasn't gotten quite the level of attention. Of course, he's gotten quite a bit of attention because he made a position change that he wasn't necessarily fond of, sort of moving to that power forward spot. And that's the kind of move that I think Warrior fans would appreciate, because he's playing out of position. He's playing, as a small forward, a guy who came in as a shooting guard, now playing power forward. But that's the kind of change that the Warriors and their championship last year have sort of inspired around the league. You got to give Indiana a lot of credit for grasping that. I give Frank Vogel a ton of credit, because you think of what the Pacers have been the last few years, Damon. They've been, you know, this smash mouth team. They rebound. They don't do things very pretty, but they certainly go out there and they've been sort of this tough, hard nosed team. Now all of a sudden you're playing small. You're playing much higher tempo. I give Frank Vogel a ton of credit because he's been very versatile in terms of how he's coached his team. It's going to be an interesting matchup to watch. I think that this is one of the few teams that you could say matchup wise, you know, at least can hold its own with the Warriors. I don't know the talent wise they can, but certainly in terms of the matchups, the Pacers are going to be an interesting matchup for them.
They will be. I agree. It's all about matchups. Don't look at the Pacers' record. Look at the matchups. Even Brooklyn. Don't look at Brooklyn's record. Look at the matchups. Brooklyn played them a little bit tough. Have twice now this year. Sean Devaney from the Sporting News joining us talking some NBA. And you live in Boston. I know we're looking ahead past this Pacers game to ask you about a Warriors-Celtics matchup. What is the matchup, if any, Boston and Brad Stevens might be able to exploit? I know that that's like trying to solve a Rubik's Cube in the dark.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, you've got Isaiah Thomas, and when he really gets going offensively, he's been able to carry them to some wins that maybe they shouldn't have had. You know, he's really been a difference maker for them. And you know, after never really finding a role in Sacramento, sort of in and out of the starting lineup and the rotation there. And then last year started off with a disaster in Phoenix. He's really played very, very well in Boston and has really become the focal point of that offense. The problem for them is I'm not sure what else they're able to get. I mean, they've got a rotation that's been very, very inconsistent aside from Isaiah Thomas. So, you know, certainly stopping Isaiah Thomas is going to be job number one for the Warriors. And they've seen him plenty of times before, of course. But that'll be job one. And then, you know, we'll be interested to see. You know, David Lee has been a little bit of a disappointment with the Celtics.
No, really?
I know you're shocked, but he's been a disappointment. I think people expected a little bit more, at least on the offensive end from him. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of effort he puts out.
Yeah, well, I mean, if he's even out there right now, isn't he banged up?
Right.
Yeah. I think he's going to pick up his ring, right? Don't Celtics fans love seeing players get rings from other teams?
Yeah, that's something that that they've become big on is watching other players get rings because it hasn't happened quite enough at the Boston Garden, that's for sure.
Sean Devaney of the Sporting News here on 95.7 The Game. People keep on telling me the Cavaliers are much better than they were last year. I see their health is better. I don't know how much of a better team they are, though, with all this health. Am I being oversold or am I being overly critical?
Well, you know, I think they still need to get on the same page. I do still see a team that's a little disjointed, I think, is still carrying some of the effects of the injuries. They didn't really have a training camp because everybody was injured. But, you know, yeah, look, we are 20 games in, and I do think you need to start pulling it together. I mean, certainly by Christmas, I think you'd like to see them, playing like a team that is a legitimate contender. The thing, too, Damon, is they know, look, they can kind of lay back. They don't have to, go too hard at this point. The East is just not that good. I of course, they'd like to play better. But I think until they get everybody healthy, until they sort of, get over this hump of the first couple of months, I just don't think they're going to take things too seriously. I think they're comfortable with where they are, and you'll see them kick it into gear, sometime just after Christmas.
See, this is why I just love this Warriors team, because there is no switch that they'll decide to flip later. They flipped it now. They're on it now.
Yeah.
And there is no off position that they're comfortable with. It is very impressive. I'd like to wrap up with the news of the day. By the way, the Sixers now have more losses this season than the Warriors have had since hiring Steve Kerr, which is unbelievable. The Sixers have 21 losses on the year. Steve Kerr and the Warriors are 105-20 over their last 125 games. That's pretty amazing right there. Jerry Colangelo, head of USA Basketball, brought in to tell somebody you need to stop drafting front court players when you have no guards, or is it more complicated than that?
Yeah, I think there is sort of, I would think of it as sort of when the Warriors brought on Jerry West, that they do want to get, somewhat of a more veteran voice, somewhat of a more, a different perspective, because obviously Sam Hinkie has sort of taken that team and is doing this experiment almost in terms of drafting all these young guys and not drafting any point guards and trying to create point guards out of clay almost. And, it's obviously not working. And I think there's a real risk of permanently turning off a lot of fans. So I think that this is a move to A, try to win back some credibility, and B, start to say, okay, look, we've done what we're going to do in terms of collecting draft picks. We'll probably have one more bad year here, but we're going to try to turn around after that. I think that's where this is going. From what I've, the way I understand it, I think that that's what the plan here is. They still have, another 4 or 5 months of really bad basketball ahead of them. And that's Colangelo can't change that. It's too late for that now. So the hope is that after this, though, that they can start to turn that corner.
Okay, so the most annoying trend in the NBA right now are hometown PA announcers trying to out-introduce Kobe Bryant. There's a competition who can do the longest visiting player introduction for starting lineups. What will Kobe's introduction be final game in Boston, and will he get some love?
I think he'll get love from the fans. I think he'll get love. There might be some sort of video sort of thing. I think there'll be some love. I mean, when Kareem, I remember back when Kareem retired, it was strange to see, but Celtics fans actually poured out some well-deserved respect for him. I would expect you'll see much the same for Kobe. But the one thing the Celtics will do, I think, is they'll probably hold back and they'll let the fans. I think that they have a certain amount of faith that their fans are going to handle it well, and they're not going to require that the fans need to be alerted that this is Kobe Bryant's final game. I think I think there'll be some restraint in terms of the official acknowledgement of it, but you'll see a long acknowledgement of it from the Celtics fans.
Yeah, it's funny. A buddy of mine who grew up a huge Celtics fan said it's not that they were cheering for Kareem's final appearance. It's just they refused to boo when Bird's on the court, and he was out there for that. Sean, thanks very much, man. If I don't talk to you before the end of this, happy holidays.
Thank you, David.
Sean Devaney, Sporting News. Always good to talk a little ball with him. And when we come on back, how to show up or get drunk. Had to show up drunk at work and then sue for $30 million. You can learn a lot of things going to USC, I guess.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
We're running out of time tonight. Zachariah coming up next. Chris Townsend coming up next. How are you, buddy?
7 to 11. No complaints. Thank you for always being the voice of reason here
on
the airwaves.
I try.
The people that are pessimistic about the Raiders right now and optimistic about the Niners right now are killing me.
Hey, if the Raiders were coming off a playoff season, yeah, you'd have a point. But they're not. As a matter of fact, it's as far removed from that as you can get, which means you have no point.
You're also dealing with guys that don't know how to win yet. And this season will help them learn how to win. If I'm a Raiders fan, I am. And now the Niners fans that are coming out of the cracks that I had to deal with last night. Oh, the Blaine train. You slept on the Blaine train. Okay. Take your missed Robbie Gould field goal and feel really good about it. But again, you should be very optimistic if you're a Raiders fan. You should still be very pessimistic if you're a Niners fan, in my humble opinion. We have Bill Williamson, Oakland Raiders reporter for ESPN. Jennifer Chan, she covers the Niners for NinerNation.com.
Yes.
And Chris DiNardi, Indiana Pacers play-by-play broadcaster for Fox. I don't know if he's actually Italian. I'm just Italian, so I feel the obligation to say it like
just
that.
Just put a little more pesto on that eye.
That's it. Great stuff.
All right, man. Good to see you. There he is, Zachariah Towney. Coming up next, we got to wrap up with what TMZ reported today. Steve Sarkisian is going to sue USC. Sarkisian reveals that he came to grips with the fact that he suffered from alcoholism in October of 2015 after a widely reported meltdown on campus. Yet, according to the suit, SC, and I'm not even kidding, this language is used in the formal lawsuit, quote unquote, kicked him to the curb.
Oh, you're kidding.
I mean, is this a side chick or is this a actual lawsuit that you're bringing against the University of Southern California? His attorney says that alcoholism is a recognized disability under California law, so firing somebody because of that disability is against the law. Sarkisian not only wants the $12.6 million remaining on his contract, he wants compensation and he wants $30 million. I've showed up work for drunk. I've said that twice now. I've showed up drunk for work. $30 million, please.
Yeah, no doubt.
Now, look, I'm not here to tell you that drinking isn't or is a disease. I'm not going to get into an argument with people and law books and medical books that have said it, indeed it is. There's no way in the world that he should be able to walk away with $30 million for publicly. Look, it's being a head football coach isn't just another job. It's not Jonan payroll. It's the most high-profile position probably any human holds in Southern California outside of Steven Spielberg director. USC football coach. Doesn't get much bigger than that. And you are now talking about you are the visual and actual physical representation of the most visible piece of PR you're going to have at, you know, USC.
Don't you have a code of conduct you have to follow as well? So I can't imagine
not being drunk around your can't even drink yet 18-year-old kids seems to be pretty much a fireable offense.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's saying that he should have been offered, rehab. He even cites he was inspired to get help by CeCe Sabathia, who stepped away to go get some rehab. The Yankees didn't fire him. But CeCe Sabathia is just a tool. He's just another tool in the drawer. You're the drawer as the head coach. You can't be the one with the problem. You have to be the leader, the guy in charge, the guy who doesn't have the can't be trusted drinking problem that embarrassed the school publicly at your own Men of Troy dinner, which he now says he wasn't even drunk at. He was hungover and on medication, which seems like a little revisionist history. Look, there's no doubt in my mind that Steve Sarkisian once was a good coach, maybe will be again. If he ever wants to be let back into the coaching community, here's the thing. Maybe he knows he never will, and this is the last money grab he's ever going to get.
That's possible.
But either way, I hope that everyone with a drinking problem gets the help that they need, and I hope that Steve Sarkisian doesn't see a dollar of something that, to me, is an opportunity he drank away. Whether he drank it away because it was a disease or he was lonely or he was crying on the inside or couldn't stop, it really doesn't matter. You cannot show up drunk at work. Really, anyone, especially coaches at universities. Come on. I mean, legal precedent says he might have a little something here. Any sense of normalcy or a man who takes accountability for his own actions would never file that lawsuit.
And correct me if I'm wrong, CeCe Sabathia never, you know, sit on the mound drunk, right? I mean, we don't know maybe for 100% sure, but there's never been that type of a story released, right?
There's never been any evidence that CeCe took the ball after taking a shot. There are a lot of stories about Steve being drunk in team meetings,
right,
on team planes.
Big difference.
Big difference.
Yeah, big difference.
So that's where we wrap up today's show. Yeah, let's go out to this. Absolutely.
Which is merengue, by the way, learned.
It is. It's merengue.
I got to work on my Spanish music knowledge
you
here.
You do.
I do.
Well,
I really do.
You really, well, you do carry the banner for all Latino, Latina flair that we have on this program.
I do my best.
I'm not even sure what Elena is.
She's Greek.
Is she Greek?
Yes, she is.
That explains the smokiness. Thanks so much to our guests today, Jack Del Rio, Mike Sando. Thanks to Sean Devaney. I tell you what, we got the buns of shame, the man buns of shame that we give to our interns when they screw up. No one earned it today.
None?
Good day for the interns.
All three?
How about that? First of all, Sonoma-tucky has been upgraded to Porpoise-tucky.
Oh.
Because now he's trying. Not only does he root for Kentucky, but he's got a freaking Dolphins pullover on. Come on, man. Porpoise-tucky from now on. Thank you so much to Flaps Up AJ. Spencer for Hire actually came in with bits of information that he would hope to get out on the air. They were the correct bits of information. Oh. He was a clubhouse leader for the man bun. That Witten 1,000 catch thing got him off the hook. Nice job.
Well done.
Danny Fry, thank you. Great job. Elena, thank you. Everyone listening, thank you. We're back tomorrow. We'll have more on Aroldis Chapman. Maybe not being so nice. Oh, boy. Late news breaking. We don't even have time to get in. Enjoy. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you tomorrow. Until then, sports don't build character. They reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.